Shalom uvracha, and welcome to the Marshall Portnoy Show. Good morning, everyone, and happy Lag BaOmer. Yes, this Thursday is Lag BaOmer, and that means you can give your three-year-old a haircut, go to a bonfire, even get married. Let's do this. It's all happening right here on AM 860. The station that speaks your language. This is Marshall Portnoy, and welcome to the show. Our very special guest will be Lisa Hosteen, the executive editor of Hadassah magazine. Rita Ratzin will be here with a bissel Yiddish, Chef Jane on how to enjoy a delicious Lag BaOmer, and a new feature. As the first of every month, we welcome Marissa Stern, cultural editor at the Jewish Exponent. Marissa has an entertaining book and a penetrating movie to tell us about. But if it's Lag BaOmer, we're going to start in the Galilee, in Meron, to celebrate the life of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai.
בשיר ואומר בוא נזכיר את בר יוחאי נעלה נעלה מרון נעלה בגיל ברון ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי נעלה נעלה מרון נעלה בגיל ברון ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי שמעון בר יוחאי מדורות בגיל ועומר בוא נזכיר את בר יוחאי נעלה נעלה מרון נעלה בגיל ברון ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי נעלה נעלה מרון נעלה בגיל ברון ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי מי נפטר בלג בעומר? רבי שמעון בר יוחאי במדורות בשיר ועומר בוא נזכיר את בר יוחאי נעלה נעלה מרון נעלה בגיל ברון ונשיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי ונזכיר ידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי נעלה נעלה מרון נעלה בגיל ברון ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי ונזכיר הידידי את רבי שמעון בר יוחאי
רבי שמעון בר יוחאי It's the second century with the failure of the rebellion of Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Akiba against the Roman occupiers The torch is taken up by Shimon Bar Yochai. And today, we take literal torches to Meron in the Galilee and light bonfires in memory and celebration. Hero of Lag BaOmer is a giant of our people, Rabbi Akiba. You know that on Yom Kippur, we spend part of the time in shul remembering the martyrs of our people, Rabbi Akiba among them. He rose from uneducated shepherd to the greatest scholar in our history, and all because of Rachel, the woman who loved him and believed in him. When her wealthy father learned of the secret betrothal, he cut her off, and the two lived in poverty, slept on straw, and gave up even that bed when they realized there were people even more destitute than they. Rachel encouraged Akiba to study, and he eventually became the greatest scholar we know today, so great, in fact, that a quarter century after that union, her father, not recognizing who he was, asked the great rabbi how to annul a decree against the daughter he had banished years ago. "Would you have declared her banished if she had married a scholar?" Akiba asked. "Of course not," replied the father. "I am the man she married," replied Akiba. The father did penance, and Akiba and Rachel lived in Torah and economic security from that time. His philosophy? That God tempers justice with mercy, but that God is affected by the proportion of good and bad in human activity. There is a great poem about Rabbi Akiva by Saul Chernikovsky, written in 1923 and set to music that same year by Joel Engel. It goes like this. Omrim yeshna eretz, eretz shchurat shemesh, aye ota eretz, efo ota shemesh. Omrim yeshna eretz, amude ha-shiva, shiva koch velechet, tzatzim al kol kiva. And that means, they say there is a land, land drenched with sun. Where is that land? Where is that sun? A land where shall come to pass what everyone hopes for. Everyone who enters meets Akiva. Peace to you, Akiva. Peace to you, Rabbi. Where are the holy people? Where is the Maccabee? And Akiva answers, all of Israel is holy. You are the Maccabee. Yes, when we look for and search for the Maccabees of today, Akiba's answer is simple. You are they. You are the Maccabees. Yes, we are all Maccabees.
אומרים ישנה ארץ, ארץ שחורת שמש, היה אותה ארץ, איפה אותה שמש? אומרים ישנה ארץ, עמודי השבעה, שבעה כוכבי לכת צצים על כל גבעה. אולי כבר אלה ותאי נראה שיבה, דבר בשבילנו אדוני לא ציבה. נכנס כל הנכנס פגע באף כי גם לא פורס אליו שלום ואור לאיש וחלום. הים אותה ארץ כובי אותה גבעה, מי ינחנו דרך יגיד לי המטיבה. אולי נרדנה ודאי מנסיבה, דבר בשבילנו אדוני לא ציבה. אולי נרדנה ודאי מנסיבה, דבר בשבילנו אדוני לא ציבה. כבר עברנו כמה מדברות וימים, כבר הלכנו חמה כוחותינו תמים. כיצד זה טעינו טרם הונח לנו, אותה ארץ שמש אותה לא מצאנו. אולי נרדנה דבר בשבילנו אדוני לא ציפה, אולי כבר איננה ודאי נעשיפה, דבר בשבילנו אדוני לא ציפה.
So good to welcome a new sponsor today on the show. Like it or not, listeners, your hair defines so much about the appearance you make and other people's first impressions of you. You know what they say about first impressions. You have only one chance to make one. And here's the thing about Raya Haig on Haverford Station Road in Haverford. The minute you walk in, your first impression is that you're in a special place. Everything is just beautiful. And that's the same care they take with your appearance. Raya Haig in Haverford. That's spelled R-A-Y-A-H-A-I-G. Is there really a Raya Haig? Absolutely. One customer with whom I spoke, I think, said it best. Raya, she said, is not a stylist. She is an artist. But there is indeed a wide variety of artisans there who can give you exactly the look you like. Dignified and stately. Wild child, a little bit alternative. Dainty during the day. A tad daring at dusk. Just right for that first meeting with a client or a date. You'll find your stylist at Raya Haig. And you'll find yourself as well. Call them for an appointment at 610-645-07. 07-645-0707, 610 area code. By the way, men, Raya Haig is not just for the ladies. Where do you think I get my hair cut? Just ask Raya. It's frankly, it's not the least expensive salon in the area. It's just the best. to find yourself and the hairstyle in which you shine. Call 610-645-0707. Raya Haig. Not hair today and gone tomorrow. Hair today, hair for always. This is Marshall Portnoy with the Marshall Portnoy Show, WWDB AM 860, the station that speaks your language. And the language we are going to speak now, of course, is Yiddish, because I am with Rita Ratzen. And I thought that since today was the 1st of May, we might have the opportunity to review some of the words and phrases that we learned in March and in April. So this will be our kind of final exam. I'm going to go through alphabetically. And one phrase or word I think I learned from you is, because you keep saying it, and I've never really asked you what it means, avada. It means, like, of course?
Avada means of course. Like, so, of course in English, avada.
There's another phrase that you use for, of course, not avada, but
vudan. What do you think?
So vudan to me means what then, right?
Well, I guess you can think of it that way in English if you must have more words, yes.
But it means the same thing.
It means the same thing.
In other words, the White House is white.
Vudan. It's not blue. What are you talking about?
How do you say that? What are you talking about?
Was redst du?
What is it?
Was redst du? Like, what are you talking about?
So now we're in the B words. So we learned Bina for stage. Again, the theater. And that
Bina.
Yeah, that's
not
right.
Not Bina.
Bina. Bina, that's right. And that related to the Hebrew word binyan, but you say binyan.
Binyan, that means a building.
And the only other B word so far that I have down is bletel, which is a page.
Page.
Okay. And then, interestingly, we got to the word du, which I guess you'd transliterate du, but that's the familiar for you.
For you,
but
right.
But there's a polite.
The polite is ir.
And that led to the conjugation of the verb to be, which I guess this is the Litvish. Ich bin, I am. Du bist, you are, in the familiar.
Right.
Ihr seid, this is you are, but to respectful, to a titled person or something. Is, he is, sie is, she is, and then in Yiddish, I guess you have es is, it is.
That's right.
So, ich bin, du bist, ihr seid, is, sie is, es is.
Right.
And the plural is a little easier because you don't have to worry about second person plural respectful. We can just go mir seinen, we are, ihr seid, you are,
right.
Sie seinen, they are.
Right, right, exactly right.
And what
so
if
now you can go ahead and speak Yiddish.
What if you had not they are in terms of people? But if you were talking about, like, a group of books or pencils, it's still...
So saying they are on the table?
Yeah.
The same thing. Sie seinen auf dem Tisch.
Okay. And then we had some words related to Passover. So the letter L now. Leke?
Lekech.
Lekech. Okay, sponge cake. And then the L words as well. We had laner or reader.
Yes.
Which is still the word that we use when we read Torah. We say we lane. Actually, it's a word still in wide use because if, for example, an individual is being considered for a position in the synagogue or you're talking about the knowledge, the attributes of a particular person, one would say, can he lane? Which means, can he chant properly from the Torah? Some listeners have written in with two questions. Ungeblosen.
All right. So to explain it a lot simpler to understand, ungeblosen, is when you're angry about something, mm-hmm. or you're annoyed with something, you don't want to talk, you seem to be all puffed up, mm-hmm. you're just not speaking, that's ungeblasen.
So like blozen, you can think of blown up.
Blown up, like a blowfish mm-hmm. that is just pouting all the time. You seem to be pouting. You're not speaking. You're ungeblasen.
Okay. And finally, a listener wrote in, verklempt.
Oh, that's a wonderful word. Verklempt actually means that something is clamped into onto
Ooh.
Something.
Oh.
So verklempt is when your feelings are all clamped up that you can't even speak. You're so emotional that you can't even speak, and that's exactly what verklempt means.
It's great to know the etymology, that it comes from the word clamp. Your heart
yes.
is all clamped up. Marvelous Yiddish background. So important a part of the spirit of our people.
It
Always
is.
Good to see you.
It is. It's been a joy. Thank you.
If you want to know more about Yiddish or would like to contact Rita Ratson, R.J. Ratson, R-J-R-A-T-S-O-N at yahoo.com. This is Marshall Portnoy with the Marshall Portnoy Show on WWDB AM 860, the station that speaks your language. I have the great privilege of sitting next to Lisa Hosteen, executive editor of Hadassah Magazine, and actually in November 2015 became the first female journalist to hold that post in the 100-year history of Hadassah Magazine, which is a little bit ironic because the name of the magazine is Hadassah. It's named for a very strong Jewish woman. It is probably the most important, essential, and significant Jewish women's organization in the world, and it took Lisa Hosteen to become the editor. You know what I wanted to ask you? You have such credentials, Swarthmore College, extensive travel, journalism experience. Your byline could easily be found on the editorial page of the New York Times, the Washington Post, probably it has. But there's something in your past that wanted you to travel the Jewish journey in journalism. Could we know a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a really great question. It's an honor to be here with you on your new radio show. I'm very happy to be having this conversation. So it started very long time ago. I knew I wanted to be a journalist through high school and college, and I had the opportunity to intern with Wolf Blitzer in 1982, during the height of the Lebanon War. Now, Wolf Blitzer was not the Wolf Blitzer that everybody knows. In those days, he was writing for the Jerusalem Post out of Washington and writing for Jewish publications. And I had the extraordinary honor to be in an office alone with him for the entire summer, covering the Lebanon War from the Washington perspective. And it was the first time that I realized that you could actually do journalism for a living, because I always thought, I didn't know that that was true. And so I pursued it again while I was in college for a couple years after that. And I was offered a position right out of college at the New Republic and at the Jewish Exponent, where I was interning my senior year of college. And I took the position at the Jewish Exponent. I knew that I wanted to go to Israel at some point, and I felt that that would be a good gateway for me. And I have to say, I never regretted taking the path of Jewish journalism, because it enabled me to really combine my two passions of Jewish affairs and journalism. And yes, my mother would sometimes say, "How come you're not writing for the New York Times?" And I always said, I love so much what I am doing that I would never trade it. And that was 35 plus years ago.
And do you credit your mom and dad for giving you that consciousness?
I definitely do. I had a very strong Jewish upbringing in a very small town in Barrington, Rhode Island, where there were not a lot of Jews. My parents were involved with founding a synagogue there, and creating a climate of Jewish identity. We were the only family that kept kosher in the entire town of Barrington, Rhode Island. So that was quite a distinction. I'm not sure that I always loved that distinction when I was growing up, but they sent me to Jewish summer camp in New Hampshire. I had an Israel experience, and so I definitely do credit them for planting those seeds.
First woman executive editor of Hadassah magazine, and I've got to think, Lisa, you had to have been the first woman editor-in-chief of the JTA, the Jewish Telegraph Agency, is that what it's called?
Yes, that's right.
What a background, and 8 years as executive editor of the Exponent right here in Philadelphia. So first woman executive editor of the Jewish Exponent in Philadelphia, traveled extensively writing about Jewish communities in Tunisia, India, the former Soviet Union, and if I may add, the numerous journalism awards you've received from the Pennsylvania Newspaper Association, the Pennsylvania Chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists, the Philadelphia Press Association, and the American Jewish Press Association, which honored you with its award for distinguished service to Jewish journalism. Now, we're broadcasting just a few days before Lag BaOmer, and I have to tell you, my wife and I feel that our major connection to Israel, besides the emails that we send and receive to dear friends in Israel, our major connection to Israel is when that wonderful Hadassah magazine comes to our door. How have the mission and focus of the magazine changed pre-Lisa Hostein to post Lisa Hostein?
When I came on board to Hadassah magazine 2 years ago, I really thought it was important to shake things up a little bit, do things a little differently, because we all need to in this day and age. And we not only completely overhauled the redesign, we also redesigned the focus and changed the focus of content, because I thought it was really important that Hadassah magazine create more of a niche. It was always respected and known as a general Jewish magazine of high quality, and that continues, of course, to be important. But I wanted, with so much else out there, I wanted to be able to create a niche. So I thought it was really important to focus more on women, because it is, after all, primarily a women's organization, although we do have a lot of male readers, and I certainly don't want to alienate them. But so far, we've only gotten positive response from men and women. I really thought it was important to create a magazine that featured strong Jewish women. You know, in American Life, we had a cover story about female farmers, like young women who were becoming farmers and kind of going back to the land. We've had stories about, you know, the hipster life that's going on in Brooklyn. We've had stories about senior women who are smoking or ingesting marijuana in some way for medical purposes. That was one of the more radical things I did, putting a woman about an age of 80 with a joint on the cover. So we were trying to do things that are a little bolder, a little more exciting and engaging, all with the mission of really enriching the readership, you know, the readers, and enabling them to connect with Israel, to connect with Hadassah, connect to Jewish life.
And I don't think I would be making too strong a point to say that in the spring of 2018, even to see a Jewish periodical in print is becoming less and less common. Tell me about that. What, you're like the last
right.
woman standing.
Right. That I'm joined by many men too. You know, there's no question. Just like the Jewish world has seen, you know, major transformation in the last couple of decades, so too has the world of media, and we have had to deal with that. You know, obviously the decline in advertising and the ascent of the digital world has dramatically changed the way journalism has been forced to function. A lot of newspapers, as you said, have closed for financial reasons. That's true in the Jewish world and the non-Jewish world. And what I have done and said since this has begun, since the late 80s really, is we have to change, we have to adapt, because not only does it present a lot of challenges, economic challenges, it also presents opportunities. The fact that we can now reach people online in a way that we never could before enables us to engage broader audiences, younger audiences, a 20 or 30 something that may never pick up a Jewish newspaper or a magazine now can see us and engage with us on social media, on websites, in ways that weren't possible before. So, the challenge, of course, is the economic one. And fortunately, in my position, and I've never really experienced this before because my previous positions, we always had to worry about the bottom line. And we still have to worry about the bottom line. We still bring in advertising. I'm still asked to, try to close that gap. But the organization is devoted to the magazine and supports it.
You read a lot. You write a lot. You think a lot. Lisa, what do you see in the next year or so for Israel-Arab relations, with the whole business of the move of the capital from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? Could you comment a little bit about those issues? Are you optimistic?
I'm not very optimistic right now. I think it's very hard to be optimistic. I think too much has happened and too much has not happened in the last 10 years, on both sides. But there's no question that I think that the situation is just not ripe right now. I don't think the leadership is there. What I hope is that violence does not, we've seen a new spate of violence after it was quiet for several years, and it's hard to know where that will go or whether the Palestinians will just, pursue the violent attack with Hamas. But I'm not really optimistic.
Well, we thank you for your frankness and sincerity, but let's go to happier things. I want you to look back on your distinguished career and tell me, when you look back, what story, what event that you covered just gave you goosebumps?
One that really sticks out in my mind is really a Philadelphia story, and that was when one of the famous refusnik families came to town, were finally released from Russia, the Slapak family. They had very strong Philadelphia connections. Their son was living here at the time, and I had been covering that story for several years. And when they were finally, given their freedom and they landed here, I was the first journalist to greet them and to interview them. And that was really, quite incredible.
I have to tell you, just as an aside, another reason that I love picking up Hadassah magazine, and although I have never met him, I would like you to say a special Rishat Shalom from Marshall to Joseph Lowen, because I look forward to that little column every month. He is absolutely delightful, and I am sure that he has done something on the Hebrew root Hey, Dalet, Samech, Hadass, and how Hadassah came from that. And specifically, how do people connect with Hadassah magazine if they have not already done so?
Well, thank you to allow me that pitch. So HadassahMagazine.org is a site that you can go online and you can subscribe to the print publication. You can see what we're doing digitally. We'll hope to get an electronic newsletter once a month. So there are all kinds of ways to connect.
Kol hakavod. Lisa Hostein, the executive editor of Hadassah magazine, just a few days before Lag BaOmer in Israel. What a privilege it's been to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
In a moment, we'll welcome Marissa Stern. The other day I was on TripAdvisor. I was actually preparing for the show, looking up some sites in Israel in connection with Lag BaOmer. And just on a whim, I decided to check out the ratings for Haimi's Marion Deli. There were 124 ratings. And, get this, 93% were either excellent or very good. And of that 93%, 73% excellent. How do you earn that kind of reputation? The food has to be good, but it's more than the food. It's the expectation of a pleasant experience. It's sometimes crowded, even out to the street. There's always people there.
But I guess like the Philadelphia Eagles, Jaime's is Super Bowl material. I don't see many empty seats at Lincoln Financial Field. So be patient. You will be seated. And most important, you'll leave with a smile on your face. Not just because of the great food and the large portions. It's the service, the ambience, the decor, the Philadelphia-style friendliness. In a word, it's Jaime's. Since 1955, 63 years young, and somehow getting better every year. I'll see you there.
This is Marshall Portnoy with the Marshall Portnoy Show on WWDBAM 860, the station that speaks the language you speak. I know that many of our readers at the end of each week eagerly devour The Exponent. And if you've read book reviews or movie reviews or are anxious to catch up on the cultural scene in Jewish Philadelphia, you have probably read the words of the woman next to whom I am sitting, and that is Marissa Stern. Marissa, what is your title at The Exponent?
Hello. I am a general assignment reporter for The Exponent, but primarily write about arts and culture. Performances, movies, books, everything going on.
So it'll be our pleasure to have Marissa with us on the first Tuesday of each month, and this is the first Tuesday of May, and I think we're going to hear about a book that begins with a man looking down at his toenails and seeing that they're all painted red.
Right.
And if that were not enough of a zany sort of beginning, listen to the title, My Russian Grandmother and Her American Vacuum Cleaner, written by Israeli author Meir Shalev, I think born in the 40s sometime. Anyway, tell us about this book and why you chose it.
Right. So it's a memoir that he wrote, but it's not a typical memoir in that it's all about his own life. It's more about his family, so focusing on, as the title suggests, his Russian grandmother, whose name is Tonya. And it's about her obsession with cleaning that he remembers from his childhood. And this vacuum cleaner that her husband's brother sent over, that at first she was completely enamored by because it picked up every speck of dust, but then she realized that it too got dirty, so she locked it away. So he talks about his childhood and growing up and how his family sort of influenced his own life, and how the zany tactics that his grandmother used growing up have sort of, you know, stayed ingrained in him as he got older.
And this takes place as he's growing up in Israel?
Right.
Okay.
So it's on a moshav where he grew up and where his mother grew up, and then later in Jerusalem after his family moves there, but they still are interconnected, and the, you know, farming lifestyle that he knew and that his mother knew still influenced him in city living. So that was interesting.
Was it the writing style that attracted you to the book, or what was it?
Definitely. It was very personal. So to me, reading it, it felt like listening to someone, you know, you're sitting down listening to someone tell you stories. You know, it all kind of comes alive as he's talking about it. So I likened it to The Princess Bride.
Mm-hmm.
How the grandfather, you know, the whole story is taking place as the grandfather is telling his grandson the story of the Princess Bride. So that's kind of how it felt reading this book. But the characters, I mean, Tonya is just hard to describe. She's very stubborn, very funny, just very eclectic. So the characters kind of keep you interested the whole time.
Sounds like an easy read.
It is.
My Russian Grandmother and Her American Vacuum Cleaner. 5 stars, 4 stars, 3 stars? What do you...
Well, I'm very bad at giving bad grades. So
yeah.
I guess I'll go with 5 stars just because
Wow.
It's enjoyable and it's, you know, you don't get bored. Even though, you know, when you listen to family stories, sometimes they're repeated all the time and you're like, oh, I get it. I've heard this before. But even though stories can be repeated in there too, they keep you interested, and it's never boring. So I feel like that's good criteria for a book. You shouldn't be bored.
Sounds great. All right. Well, that sounds like quite a book. Okay. It's Saturday night. It's after Shabbat. People may want to go out to the movies. Do you have anything that you'd like to recommend to them?
The movie 1945 recently opened at the Ritz 5 and Bryn Mawr Film Institute. It's not a happy movie, mm-hmm. but it's interesting. It follows townspeople in a small Hungarian village after the war ended. and these two Jewish men appear by train one day, and there were no Jews left in this village. So when they come back, everyone is sort of like, oh, why are they here? Who are they? What do they want? And they get kind of scared and a little suspicious. And these two Jewish men, it's a father and son, and they say that they have trunks of perfumes and cosmetics. It's all very tense, suspicious. The town clerk is actually very nervous about their appearance. And he, you know, starts to investigate them and has someone follow them around as they go into town to try to figure out what their motives are, why they're here. And when their motives are finally revealed, it's a very emotional moment for them.
Is this an American film?
It's Hungarian.
Hungarian,
yes,
film.
So the director is from Budapest, and he wanted to create a film that sort of told the story of what happened after the Jews left town, and what sort of happened after the war, and how the townspeople sort of, they felt guilty. You know, they occupied the Jews' stores and their homes. And that guilt sort of manifests in when these two Jews come back to town, because they're like, oh, do they want their homes back? Do they want their store back? And it's kind of how they deal with that.
Sounds fascinating. So great book recommendation, My Russian Grandmother and Her American Vacuum Cleaner, and a movie, 1945, playing now at the Bryn Mawr Film Institute and at the Ritz. Marissa Stern, thank you for your May recommendations. We'll see you back here first Tuesday in June.
Sounds good.
This is Marshall Portnoy on WWDB AM 860 in honor of Lag BaOmer. We welcome you to a new feature of the Marshall Portnoy Show, Nilmad Ivrit. Let's learn Hebrew. And I thought we would start today with the importance of what we call the Shoresh, which simply means the root letters of a word. As an example, we can take the English word plant, which has a sort of shoresh with the letters P, L, N, and T. From those letters, we get the word plant, plantation, plantain, and so forth. But that is not a constant in English. In fact, it's an exception. So, for example, the word book and the word scribe don't seem to have a linguistic relationship. But Hebrew is a very different story. A book is a sefer, and a scribe is a sofer. So, to start with something we just celebrated a few weeks ago, the root samech, dalet, resh, samech, dalet, resh. If you sound those letters out, you get sdur. So you can probably hear what I'm getting at. Seder. Seder. The Passover service and meal. But the word Seder gives us the real meaning of the observance, something that happens in a certain order, which is what Seder means. So, a prayer book is a book with prayers that are presented not any old way, but in a certain order. So we call that book a sidur. Seder, sidur. And if someone asks you how things are, you could respond by saying, beseder, things are okay. Things are in order. But we can have such wonderful fun with Hebrew words by digging even deeper. Let's take just the first two letters, samech and dalet. Sd sounds out as sud, which means a secret. Then let's take the last two letters, dalet and resh. Dur. Dur, that means a generation. What does that tell us? That the secret of Judaism is maintaining our special order of things from generation to generation, and that keeping that order, that seder, will assure us of generations to come.
This is Marshall Portnoy on WWDB AM 860, the station that speaks your language. And the holiday we celebrate this week is Lag BaOmer, which means going out into the field, lighting bonfires, having a wonderful time in the middle of this period between Passover and Shavuot. That reminds me a little bit of cookouts and outdoor food. And there couldn't be a more welcome outdoor food to me than coleslaw, which goes with just about anything. I learned from Wikipedia that coleslaw, which I thought had something to do with either old King Cole was a merry old soul or Nat King Cole or something like that, had nothing of the kind. It is an English version of the Dutch term coleslaw, which means cabbage salad. And beyond that, all I know about coleslaw is that I love it. And I'm here with Chef Jane, who can tell our listeners a lot more about coleslaw and why it's so delicious.
Well, thank you. And not only delicious, but very easy to make and very rewarding, because it's a great salad to take on a picnic, to have with a cookout. Of course, if you take coleslaw, and I'll go over the ingredients, but if you do take it out to a picnic, it does need to be in a cooler because it contains mayonnaise, and that could spoil on a hot day. So there's always the concern for health if you're using anything with mayonnaise. But basically, the main ingredient is cabbage, and there's three ways that you can prepare the cabbage. One, in my recipe, in my cookbook, it calls for half a head of cabbage. You can remove the core and then slice the cabbage very, very thinly to get the nice shreds. Or if you have a Cuisinart, you can use a shredding disc and you can cut the cabbage into wedges and then shred it using the Cuisinart. Or most easy and most convenient, you can go to the grocery store and buy a one-pound bag of shredded cabbage. And that makes it so easy if you're in a hurry.
Actually, I learned from Wikipedia that mayonnaise was really not used until the 18th century. And that, therefore, a lot of the international recipes for coleslaw don't contain mayonnaise. They go back further in history.
Right. You can make a cabbage salad with a vinaigrette without that creamy mayonnaise. You could certainly do that. But in my recipe, the way I like to do it is take a large bowl and then make the dressing in the bottom of the bowl containing of 2 tablespoons of sugar, 2 ounces of white vinegar, that would be a shot glass, 1/8 teaspoon of celery seeds, 3/4 cup of mayo, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and then you mix that up in the bottom of your salad bowl. And then you take your shredded cabbage and place that over the dressing, and you can add a small grated onion, if you don't mind raw onion, or you could do some green onion, and a large carrot shredded and 3 radishes shredded. And then you mix that all together and let it sit in the fridge for about an hour so that all the flavors can develop. And you've got a wonderful coleslaw to accompany hamburgers or fried chicken or any kind of thing like that that you would bring on an outing.
Talk to our listeners for a minute about mayonnaise. Do you make your own mayonnaise, or does one make one's own mayonnaise?
Mayonnaise is basically an emulsion of eggs and oil. We have very good quality mayonnaise, which is commercially available in the grocery, so I buy. I would say that if you want to lighten up the coleslaw recipe, you could use 1/2 sour cream and 1/2 mayo, and that will give you a lighter coleslaw. But however you do the cabbage, whether you hand slice it in the Cuisinart, or use the bag variety, you'll find that this is an easy recipe and very rewarding, so I hope you enjoy it.
I know that we will. It's on page 160 of A Jewish Calendar of Festive Foods. That's available at Jaime's, Marion Deli, Amazon.com, or your favorite bookstore. You can also find it at WWDBAM.com. Click on the Marshall Portnoy Show, and you'll find that wonderful recipe for coleslaw coming right up. Also check it out on our Facebook page. Chef Jane, thank you so much.
You are very welcome.
And a happy Lag BaOmer.
Thanks.
That music means Shalom, lehitraot, peace and fulfillment to one and all. Remember to write us at P.O. Box 2786, Bala Cynwyd, PA 19004. Email us at marshallportnoyshow@gmail.com. Send us musical requests for birthdays and anniversaries. Tell us what you'd like to hear on the show, and do like us on Facebook. Remember, you can listen to this show or any show on WWDBAM by podcast. That podcast, 24 hours. Just go to WWDBAM.com. Thanks to special guest Lisa Hosting, executive editor at Hadassah Magazine. I love reading that magazine. Adank, Rita Ratzin, and Chef Jane, and Marissa Stern, first turn on the show. Thanks so much for those wonderful reviews. Our sponsors, Jaime's Mariandeli and Raya Haig Coiffure, for the show, engineer extraordinaire Jason Duffy, and for WWDB operations manager Tim Halloran, special thanks to Barry Reisman and Laura Lewis. Be sure and join us next Tuesday, right after Barry, when we shall honor two great events, Mother's Day in a Yiddish way and Yom Yerushalayim, Jerusalem Day, in an Israeli fashion. Our special guest will be an Arab-Israeli citizen, Mohammed Daroshe, who represents a marvelous Jewish-Arab institution near Hadera, Givat Chaviva. You may not agree with everything he says, but you will love the spirit with which he says it. Stay tuned for my friends at the Polish-American Hour. Zostańcie z nami przyjaciele na polsko-amerykańskim radio show. This has been Marshall Portnoy. Shalom uvracha.